for members only. Golf Smarter number 212 for the first show of 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Continuing the quest of playing the top 100 courses.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast and a happy new year to you. Today's show is brought to you by the Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com and the Scottsdale Visitors and Convention Bureau. More on that after the interview. Today we have an entertaining return of the self-proclaimed top 100 golfer. Since this quest is beyond my wildest dreams, I hope you agree that sitting around the fire listening to stories about world golf travel is pretty entertaining. If you've heard him in the past, then you know we provide him with a different name for each appearance. So, welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Mickey.
Thank you, Fred. It's good to be back.
Now, for the listeners who aren't aware, this will be your fourth appearance on the Golf Smarter podcast, and I went back and checked it out. December of 06, January of 08, last day of the year. Well, we either do the first or last show of the year with you to check out what you've been up to.
Well, thank you. I didn't realize it's been 4 years. It's been a lot of fun, so thanks for having me.
Oh, no. I look forward to, like, oh, good, it's December. I get to call him back. Now, and the reason we explain why we use a different name for you every year.
So I'm playing or trying to play the top 100 golf courses in the world, and I'm doing it anonymously. So I travel under the cover of darkness and don't really want people to know who I am, partly because I want to be able to give a real opinion of the course rather than I love every course and everything. And I don't want to really offend members that are nice enough to take me out. And partly because I don't want people stalking me when I write something bad about their courses.
I wouldn't worry about it. So, and tell me how this all began. And for those of you who've heard this before, too bad. I want to hear this again. For those who don't know.
I've been playing golf about 20 years or so. And with a group of friends, we used to go over to Ireland, Scotland, and England and play. And a couple of years back, somebody gave me one of these wooden boards where you stick gold pegs into it, which tracks Golf Magazine ranks the top 100 courses in the world. And I filled it out, and I had maybe 30, 35 pegs at that point. And I said, you know, this can't be that hard. Let me focus on this and try to do it. So ever since then, I've been very focused and traveling around the world, sometimes with buddies, and we've been trying to play the top 100 in the world. So far, so good.
But it's the top 100 based on a specific list, not the changing list.
That's correct. So it's the 2003 Golf Magazine list. The problem with the list changing it changes every 2 years. It's hard enough to play the top 100 in the world. Once you're trying to hit a moving target, it's really hard. Although I do know several people that are trying to hit the moving target. They're trying to play each of the lists over the last 10 or 20 years, which is quite a feat.
So now you've started this thing. You don't think you're the first one to try to accomplish this, are you?
No, I'm not. In fact, if you go onto my website, there's a place you can click on the left-hand side. It's called the Golfer's Honor Roll. There's about 12 people that have done it, including one gentleman who played the top 100 courses in 100 days, a feat that I believe will never be repeated and is unbelievably impossible, a guy by the name of Robert McCoy.
Wow. We even know his name.
I list the people's names. In fact, I've become the destination site for lunatics going around trying to play all these top golf courses. So when people actually achieve it now, they send me an email and they put their name up on the website. I verify it. Usually a magazine or a newspaper will write about them, or they'll send me their itinerary. Robert, I've talked to maybe a half dozen of these people that have done this, and with Robert, he actually sent me his itinerary, and he literally traveled for 100 days. He bought a round-the-world business-class ticket on British Airways and just kept going and playing these courses. But how he did that and was able to arrange to play all these private clubs and didn't get delayed by weather or airlines, it's an unbelievable accomplishment. I don't know how he did it. Now, he was a member of several exclusive courses, that doesn't hurt. But still, it's quite a feat.
Well, you know, nothing personal, but we got to get him on the show.
Yeah, you do. He's retired. I believe he's in Florida. Yeah, he's a fascinating guy.
That's like the 63-game hit streak.
It's unbelievable.
Or maybe the 100 points in one game, basketball mm-hmm. game. I mean, I just mm-hmm. can't imagine anyone ever trying to accomplish that or succeeding.
I actually don't think it'll be fun because I've done golf trips where you play 7 days in a row or 10 days in a row, and after a while you just burn out.
Sure.
There is such a thing as too much golf.
I'm curious as to how much time he took off after the 100 days.
Yeah, probably a lot.
Yeah. Don't want to see another golf ball. Or I don't want to lose another golf ball. And how many courses? And let's get back to you. Let's talk about him. Now, that is really a remarkable feat. I mean, I know there's a couple people who've done 50 states in 50 days. They've mm-hmm. played a course in 50 states. I have a friend who actually played 50 mm-hmm. courses in 50 states mm-hmm. in 50 days. And that's been done by a couple of people.
That's pretty hard, yeah.
Yeah, that's very hard.
What makes what McCoy did really tough is Durban, a course in South Africa. It's the only course in Africa. That's a couple days in and out to play that. Japan, Australia, New Zealand. Yeah, it's a very, very difficult. And again, logistically, to be able to do that and to, you know, be able to play this course on Monday, the next course on Tuesday, not hit any conflicts, and be able to lock down all those tee times is phenomenal.
And obviously you have to be very comfortable sleeping on airplanes.
Yeah, and sleeping in bad hotels and everywhere else, I'm sure, yep.
Yeah, welcome to the PGA Tour. So of the top 100 courses from the 2003 Golf Magazine list, how many have you now accomplished?
I finished 88 of the top 100. I got eight new courses this year that I completed.
Congratulations!
And thank you.
Which eight did you get to do?
So the very, very early in 2009, I played Cypress Point. So Cypress Point is near you. It is in Pebble Beach, California, and it is the number two ranked golf course in the world, behind number one ranked Pine Valley. So by January 15th of last year, if I had stopped playing golf, I would have just had a phenomenal golf year just by playing Cypress Point. My own personal opinion now, having played 88 of the top 100, Cypress Point is the best golf course I've ever played. It is an unbelievable place.
And number one, again, is?
Is Pine Valley, which is in New Jersey.
And you've played that, and you think
played
this is better?
Well. I do.
Why?
It was designed by Alistair McKenzie, who designed Augusta and is a famous and very strategic architect. So the layout of the course is quite good. It's set right on Monterey Bay. So for those people familiar with Pebble Beach, if you look at the views and how dramatic it is with the headlands and the golf up on top of the water and the beautiful views of the bay, it has 8 or 10 holes like that, and it's extremely private, only 125 members. It's perfectly manicured, and it's one of these courses. I mean, a lot of the courses I get to play, I'm fortunate enough to play as part of this. You'll have maybe 3 or 4 holes on a different course. Well, you'll walk up to the tee box and your jaw will drop open, and you will say to yourself, "Wow, this is a spectacular golf hole." At Cypress Point, you more or less do that on every single hole.
Oh.
And the most, arguably one of the most famous holes in the world is the 16th hole at Cypress Point. So the 16th hole at Cypress Point plays over the bay. It's a 230-yard carry. It's a par 3. I believe it's the most photographed or one of the most photographed. And it's just extremely dramatic. It's very hard to hit the green, and it's awe-inspiring. But as good a hole that is, and that gets all the notoriety and all the press, the hole before it, the 15th hole, which is also a par 3, it's a little 130-yard par 3, is equally as dramatic. Hmm. It's set in a little inlet, and you have to hit over Monterey Bay. It's got cypress trees around it. It's really just a spectacular golf course. And, it's one of these courses where the 14th hole, you walk up and you see the bay, and it's a dramatic uphill par 4. 15 and 16 are awe-inspiring, and then 17 is a spectacular hole too. 17 is very similar to the 18th at Pebble Beach. Right, a lot of people are familiar with the 18th at Pebble Beach, the big par five. You hit over water, and then it's got a dramatic hole along the water, and then a beautiful green. Cypress Point 17 is basically the opposite of that, you know, laid out the opposite way. But it's just, it's a really great place. So I started off, had a very strong January for 2009.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice. Do you keep score when you play?
I do.
And does that ever have any impact on how you feel about a course after you walk away?
That's a very good question, and I've talked about this. In fact, yesterday I was talking to somebody at length who lives in the Chicago area who's also playing the top 100. He played 80 or so. He sent me an email through the blog, and I just got talking to him.
You have a Facebook group going with these people?
I don't, but I do have a large network of people now that email each other and help each other out. It's become quite an event.
Wow. And I know that you've even had some Golf Smarter listeners help you.
Yes, they have indeed. And I've helped some people as well.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So when people are nice and ask and I can help, I try to, and vice versa. That's what's great about the game. In answer to your question, I would like to think it doesn't, but I think it does, right? So if you play really poorly on a course, I think it probably would impact what you think of it. Although I do have a couple of courses that I played horribly on, but I really liked the course. I played okay at Cypress, so I don't think it really impacted what I thought of the course. But it's a very good question. That's an often debated question about whether how you play affects whether you like the course or not.
Oh, sure. I know that if I'm having a bad day and start getting cranky about all these mm-hmm. crappy shots that I'm taking, mm-hmm. I just lose sight of where I am on the golf mm-hmm. course, what
yep.
hole, what I'm doing. It just
yep.
and just
bleh, yep. exactly.
Just feeling cranky. Yeah. Huh. So, do you play from the tips or do you?
No. The members tees. Yeah.
Okay.
Some of the courses, more so in Europe than in the U.S., they won't let you play from the tips. Which is fine by me. No, just from I'm getting too old to get beat up on a golf course. So I'm out there to have fun. So I don't need to prove my manhood anymore.
Don't we know it? Are you kidding? You are the stud. Look what you're doing. You prove your manhood. I'm gonna make it to 100. You are a total stud.
Thank you.
I was shocked. Some Golf Smarter listeners and I, this in 2009, we did a trip to Prague.
Oh, nice.
We had a Golf Smarter adventure and should have invited you.
You should have, yeah.
Well, we're hoping to do some more of these things. But
great.
We did 3 days of golf and touring in Prague, Czech Republic.
Nice.
And it was my first experience of playing golf in Europe. And one of the things that I was kind of like, what? So you're not allowed to take practice swings on the tee box?
Mm.
Have you witnessed that? Or was that specific to Czech Republic?
Depends on the course. I haven't run into that very often. I know one of the issues you find a lot in Europe is they don't have driving ranges. A lot mm-hmm. of the old courses in Britain don't have that. And mm-hmm. They don't really believe in warm-up, I guess. So, yeah, no, that's unusual that you can't take a practice swing on the tee.
Yeah, I've heard of people getting thrown off the course because they took a divot pointing the wrong direction, I guess.
Wow, that's pretty severe.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we move on from
Cypress. Yeah, so yeah. And then and my big adventure this year was in May. I went over to Europe, and I've now completed all of the top 100 courses in Europe. So I played two courses on the trip. Valderrama, which is in Spain. A lot of people have heard of Valderrama. A Ryder Cup was held there. It has a famous 17th hole where it's a par 5 where you hit your third shot over water. And I really enjoyed Valderrama. Southern Spain is beautiful. It's very warm. It's a tropical climate. And what makes Valderrama unique is it's built on a former, forest, and it's all cork trees. So it's very unusual, and a cork tree, you know, the cork that you have in a wine bottle, it grows around, it's basically the bark of a tree. So you have this golf course that is as manicured as Augusta, that's set on rolling hills with tens of thousands of cork trees around it. So I really enjoyed Valderrama. That was quite a nice experience.
Now, I would think, knowing the properties of cork, that you'd want to hit the tree and have the ball bounce off of it.
You would. You would, and the course is somewhat controversial. The two people I played with didn't like Valderrama as much as I did because the way it was designed, I'm pretty sure it was Robert Trent Jones Sr. that designed it. He actually put trees in the way intentionally. So there's a couple shots, either on tees or greens, where you have to hit around or over a tree, which I didn't mind that much, but some people don't like that. But, I don't think you want to try to hit them, but, yeah, it is a little nicer that they're cork. They don't tend to bounce as far after they hit them.
You don't get balls lodged inside the tree.
Exactly.
Cactus
and
Mexico and, or something.
And then the last course I played in Europe, which I found to be the hardest to get on, was Loch Lomond. And Loch Lomond is a private course in Scotland near Glasgow. And almost all courses in Great Britain allow visitors if you just book in advance. Loch Lomond is a very private club. In fact, it was built about 10, 15 years ago, and it was meant to be a destination type of golf course, almost like the Augusta of Europe. So that actually proved to be extremely difficult to get on. I was eventually able to find a member who was an American, and he hooked me up, and we were able to play that. Loch Lomond is one of the most beautiful places I've played because it's set on I think it's called Loch Lomond, a beautiful lake. And it's an American-style course, which, again, is unusual for Europe because mostly in the British Isles they have a lot of links courses, but really enjoyed Loch Lomond.
It was more like a parkland.
Exactly, but it was really, really a good place to finish.
Amazing. And how is it that an American is able to get himself a membership in a course like that?
Yeah, it's kind of one of these. It's extremely affluent people.
Money talks.
Right. So I think that actually the way they set it up, they set a certain number of memberships up for each country, and they wanted to have it as a sort of a global golf club. It's a little bit weird. Even if you're a member, I forget the number, it's either 14 or 16 times, you can't play the course more than that many times. They don't want it to be anybody's home course. Hmm. They want it to just be, it's a destination. You go to Scotland, you play there a couple times, you have a couple guests. So, yeah, there's members from America and all different countries there.
That's really interesting to have a destination course that's private.
Mm-hmm. Extremely private.
Wow. That's really interesting.
They have there's a big guard gate. You have to pull up to a guard gate, and if your name's on the list, they open up this big wrought iron gate and let you in, and the guy in the guard gate has a walkie-talkie, and then when you drive up, there's somebody that comes out of the old mansion, which is now the clubhouse, and he's got a walkie-talkie. Like, they kind of follow you around the property and stuff. Yeah, it's almost a little bit like the White House. I described it on the blog. It's very, very, very dramatic, old manor house, and it's just really, really an interesting setup.
Okay, so that leaves us with five more courses that you did over this
year.
Yeah,
so the summer I went out to Denver and played Cherry Hills, a nice old course, very famous for Arnold Palmer won the 1960 U.S. Open at Cherry Hills, and he drove the first green. And it's about a 360 or 70-yard hole, so that's what it's famous for. He came from behind, I forget, maybe like 8 or 10 strokes. So it's a very historic course. It's also historic because when Dwight Eisenhower was president, he used to have his summer White House in Denver. And he played Cherry Hills. He was a member there. And I like to do research before playing the courses, found out something fascinating. When Ike was president, so he was president for 8 years, he played 800 rounds of golf.
Wow.
If you could imagine that. He played 100 rounds a year. Now, I don't play anywhere near that. I don't know many people that do. Imagine being the president of the United States and playing 100 times.
Well, come on. We just went through a presidency where he had more vacation time than anyone else. So,
yeah.
So I guess we can kind of imagine if you played golf, it would be, you know.
So Ike was a serious golfer. Yeah. So yeah. In the clubhouse at Cherry Hills, they have. I think he had an office there too. There's all this memorabilia and things from Eisenhower and Palmer. So that was really nice. It was also very nice because in Denver you're at altitude and your ball goes 10% higher further. So sure. you can feel like a real stud out there.
Yeah, someone who doesn't play that much and can pick wherever he wants to go, that would be the place you'd want to end up.
And then at the end of the summer and the fall, I went back to Ohio twice more. And as I think I've said before, Ohio has some of the best golf in the United States. Five courses in the World Top 100 are in Ohio. So I finished playing all the Ohio courses. I played the Golf Club and Muirfield Village, which are right near Columbus. Muirfield Village is very famous. Jack has his his Memorial tournament there every year, and really enjoyed that. It reminded me honestly of Augusta, very well manicured, very hilly property. And it's a course that Jack designed. They treated us very well there, so that was a really nice experience to finally play Jack's course. And again, the clubhouse has a lot of memorabilia and history and so forth. So in addition to getting to play all these great courses, you really get exposed to a lot of golf history and memorabilia and so forth. So that was an experience. And the third course I played in Ohio was a course called Camargo, which is near Cincinnati. And Camargo is designed by Seth Rayner. He designed during the golden era of architecture in the 1920s, and a really, really pretty course. So I'm going to post the write-up on that in January. I haven't posted that yet, but really just a beautiful place and played with a real gentleman as a member. So yeah, Ohio is highly rated as golf, so all the five courses that I was lucky enough to get on and play there, I liked. I could see why it's rated highly.
Mm. And that, I think that leaves us one more for this year, wasn't it? You had three there and Denver.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Then I played Ocean Forest, which is in Georgia, so Sea Island, Georgia, which was okay. Of a lot of the courses I played, I wouldn't put it in my favorite. Fairly new course, opened within the last 10 years, designed by Reese Jones. Very private. I did play that one.
Are you getting a little bit jaded here? I mean, these have been ranked as some of the top 100 courses, and you're going,
eh. I could be.
You know, I've been to Japan. I've been all over the world. I don't really care.
I could be. Yeah, it's a fair comment. Because you're right. They are all really good, and I'm lucky to play them, right? I mean, Ocean Forest was perfectly manicured, had great caddies. It was a delightful day, right? I shouldn't be complaining. You know, there's no condos surrounding the course. It's a delightful place. But yeah. I am getting jaded.
Right, and the people listening in Ohio right now who are buried in snow. You shut up.
Fair point.
Now, frequently, you know, we've talked about this, and I've asked you before. It sounds like that you rate these courses based on their beauty, not necessarily mm-hmm. on their playability. Mm-hmm. But you've never really talked about bunkers. Mm-hmm. Do you like? You know what? I better go make sure I go in a bunker today, see what the sand is like here, or see how it plays. Do you ever, you know, add that into your equation of what you think of? Because I spend a lot of time.
Not really. I'm not that great a golfer, right? So I'm a mid-level handicapper, but I've never really had trouble with bunkers or sand, so it typically doesn't bother me.
So it's not playability that you do your rankings, your assessments that you write about?
Not really. So Carnoustie, for example, in Scotland is one of the hardest courses in the world, bar none. And especially if the wind's blowing, it's almost impossible, but I really like it. So I try not to look at that. But, you know, for instance, so Cypress Point, which I mentioned before, has one of the reasons I liked it and would rank it as the top course, just the bunkering. It's built in a sandy area. Mm-hmm. The way McKinsey did the bunkering is just really beautiful and dramatic, and there's a lot of sand all over. But no, typically, I don't. Sand doesn't trouble me that much.
And do you spend much time studying these courses before you go? I mean, do you
study
the architects and what they're doing and stuff?
Yep, I do. So I have a couple reference books. So the one book I rely on is there's a book called The Confidential Guide to Golf, which was written by Tom Doak, where he went out years ago and rated. He's one of the best architects living today. He went out and has a view and rated courses. There's also some other books that I look at. I'll look at websites. If I can, I'll try to look at the web site of the course. Maybe if they have a club history, do some research, because I do like to understand and appreciate the history before I go. Or maybe if I'm there, pick up the club history and makes the write-ups on the blog more meaningful to get the facts right and to understand the history of the course.
Do you recommend the book, Confidential Guide for Golf?
Yeah, although it's very expensive. It's you could look on Amazon or so. It's maybe $300-$400.
Whoa!
Because what he did, I don't know that an architect would write a book like this today. He sliced and diced courses. I mean, similar to what I'm doing on the blog. If I don't like a course, I say that and I say why and stuff. Tom really went, you know, he attacked Jack Nicklaus and some pretty prime architects in the book and said, you know, I don't like this course because of this or that. So, yeah, it's a pretty prized book. I think it was printed in some sort of a limited edition.
Hmm.
But, yeah, if you can get your hands on a copy, you could probably get it cheaper on eBay. But, yeah, I do recommend it if you get your hands on a copy. If you're a golf lunatic like me and trying to play these courses, you should get a copy.
Well, I'll make sure that it's available on our Golfers Mart. We have a book section in our Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com, and I'll make sure that it's there. So if anybody wants to go and check that out, I'm sure they're used copies.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is something you want to, if you're a collector, I guess this is something you definitely want to have in your library. But so do you have just a greater appreciation of architecture, golf architecture, with every passing year?
Very much so. As I've been reading the books and so forth, I've really appreciated the work of Alistair McKenzie, who did Augusta, who did Cypress, did Crystal Downs up in Michigan, which is ranked in the top 25. So I've come to appreciate Seth Rayner, who designed Camargo, the course I talked about, in Yeamans Hall in South Carolina. So I've really gotten to learn and see how these different architects and styles come together. So one of the things I'm really looking forward to, I'm planning to go to Australia in March for 2 weeks and do a grand tour of Australia. And there's five courses I need to play down there. Almost all of them are designed by Alistair McKenzie as well. He did a trip to Australia in, I think, the 20s or the 30s. And design many of the top courses, or had input into many of the top courses. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's my big trip for 2010.
And so with 12 courses left on your list,
mm-hmm.
And you're going to do, what, do you have more than five planned for 2010?
Yeah, I do. I'm probably going to play Shore Acres in Chicago, Wade Hampton, in North Carolina, Colonial in Texas. I'll probably do maybe eight or so. That will leave me only a handful. I need to play Highland Links, which is out in Nova Scotia in Canada. Then only one or two other courses. And then, you know, I basically have figured out a way where I could play 99 out of the top 100. And you can guess and your readers can guess what the last course I need to play is and what the hardest course to get on in the world is.
Augusta,
by far, not even close to anything else. So yeah, I knock on wood, you know, I have some ways I may be able to get on. And the problem with Augusta is, USA Today published a list of their members a couple of years ago, and it's mostly CEOs, you know, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, a lot of names you would recognize, you know, chairman of many of Fortune 500 companies. So it's a hard group to get into. Course is only open 6 months out of the year. And
wait a minute, does Bill Gates play golf?
He does, yeah.
Really?
He's about our level handicap. Yeah. Maybe
wow.
A little higher. I think he's an 18 or so.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, he just went up a notch.
Yeah. and then you're not allowed to ask. So I've met two Augusta members, but you can't ask them. It's an automatic no. So you have to kind of hint around and they have to ask you. So I'll eventually get there. You know, going back to my other comment, so one of the names of people go and look on the blog and look at the honor roll of people that have played the top 100, there's another fascinating story. Somebody on there, his name is Bernie Hillier. He finished playing the top 100 in 1997. So it took him, he finished 99 out of the top 100, and then he couldn't get Augusta. It took him 12 years
Wow.
Together. So it took him like 10 years to play 99, and then another 12 to get on Augusta. He tells a fascinating story. I've talked to him. He's retired also, lives in New York. Really nice guy, and I think the New York Post did an article on him after he finished the top 100. He basically stalked somebody, a guy that worked in the kitchen at Augusta, because they let people that work there play once a year. So he goes through this whole thing about how he tracked this guy down and how he was able to play that way. So hopefully I won't have to go to that extreme to get onto Augusta, but you never know.
And so let's see. So you're thinking probably by end of 2011, you'll have your 99 out of 100 courses, and it's just who knows when you get to number 100?
I think that's fair. Yep.
Wow. Then what do we talk about? Then I need to talk to you at least once a year.
Yeah, well, I'll have to figure out some other thing to become obsessed with.
So I've noticed that on the blog that you have included more photos this year. You've done some posts at the end of 2009,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and you've gotten into more digital photography to share with us what you got to see.
I have, yeah. I get a lot of comments from readers. People don't always see the comments because they're at the end of each post. But I really get a lot of good comments on the pictures, so I thought it would be a good idea. And so, you know, the courses I talked about, Loch Lomond, Valderrama, Cyprus, I posted a lot of those pictures a couple of weeks ago for listeners that are interested in that. Yeah, the picture's worth 1,000 words. So.
There you go. There you go. Well, listen, as we've done for a number of years now, we highly recommend that every listener check out top100golf.blogspot.com, and it's the number 100. So top100golf.blogspot.com, and follow your journey, share the journey, and hopefully help you with your journey. Wish you a very happy and healthy new year. Thanks again for coming back on the show. I really enjoy doing this with you each year. To me, if it was a choice between the confidential guide for golf or three or four rounds of golf, sorry, I'm going to take the rounds of golf.
Yep.
If I have to spend the money.
I really enjoy it too. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Hopefully we can find that guy, Robert McCoy, who played 100 courses in 100 days all over the world. It's a fascinating story, but I can't believe it's possible. So we've got to try to track that guy down. If you know him, or you're listening, please get in touch with me, because you need to be talked to. We need to sit you down and talk to you. Hey, Golf Smarter member, we've got a book. We're giving away a book because you're a Golf Smarter member. Catherine Roberts' latest book, Swing Flaws and Fitness Fixes. Congratulations, Gary Flaherty of Hudson, Ohio. That book is in the mail to you. Today, I'm really excited to announce a new contest that is a full prize package centered around the FBR Open, which is now called the Waste Management Phoenix Open, being played at the TPC Scottsdale course. This PGA tournament is being held next month, February 22nd through the 28th. And if you've listened to this later than it was published, it's real soon. It's late February. Now, if you win, you're going to receive VIP tickets to the Skybox on the 16th hole, golf for two at Eagle Mountain Golf Club, 3 nights hotel stay, and a sumptuous dinner for two. Oh, man. What's so cool is that the details for this package are being updated to me daily, so we're really yet to know which hotel or restaurant, but let me assure you, they're going to be first rate. This package is worth thousands of dollars and is being sponsored by the Scottsdale Visitors and Convention Bureau, so believe me, they're going to do everything they can to impress you, so they'll get you a great... Actually, they told me that there's a hotel... And they've already changed because they got an upgrade, and they're still working on a better restaurant. So it's changing all the time. And I'll keep you updated over the next couple weeks, because the deadline for entry is until February 1st. Now, you must be able to go on those specific dates at the end of February, and you provide your own transportation to Phoenix, Arizona. But remember, you get VIP tickets to the event, hotel, dinner, and golf for two. So a couple extra bucks for the airfare, that's all it's going to cost you. Everything else pretty much is going to be taken care of. Deadline for entry, of course, you want to buy me a gift, then you can, you know, spend a couple extra bucks too. Deadline for entries, as I said, is February 1st, 2010. And we'll announce the winner's name on the episode published on Tuesday, February 2nd. To enter, click on the contest tab at golfsmarter.com. But as a Golf Smarter member, you're already entered. But as a Golf Smarter member, you can enter again and your name will be entered twice. It's the only way I let entries go in twice. I weed all the redundancies out. So if you really want to win, enter a second time. While you're on the page entering the contest, there's a banner at the top of the page to learn more about Scottsdale, Arizona. Go ahead, click on the banner. Do me a favor, because it really helps Golf Smarter when you click on that banner. You know, they see that we provide results. So take a quick spin and prove to them the power of podcasts. Thanks and good luck. Recently, I've been receiving a bunch of emails from listeners with questions directed at some of our previous guests. And so I've been posting the question and the answer on the blog. So check it out, because these are generally instructional in nature. That's why I put them there. And there are good tips and lessons that everyone can benefit from. We close with a quote submitted by William Horning of Martinsburg, West Virginia. It was John Updike who once said this about golf. Golf appeals to the idiot in us and the child. Just how childlike golfers become is proven by their frequent inability to count past five. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.